All right. The Baal HaTurim has a, I think, fairly famous comment on the first word in Sefer VaYikra. There is a, when you look in the Sefer Torah, there's something that sort of jumps out at you, and that is, of course, the Aleph Zeira at the beginning of Sefer VaYikra, the tiny little Aleph that appears in Sefer VaYikra. So it's the Baal HaTurim writes that the tiny Aleph is a reflection of the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu, that he didn't want to make it seem like he was worthy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu singling him out for a conversation. VaYikra implies that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like looking around, okay, who do I want to talk to? That one. And he singled him out and he chose Moshe Rabbeinu to be the one to speak to. Whereas VaYikar would imply that, you know, he just happened to walk into a room and spoke to the first guy that that he saw, that he just happened upon Moshe Rabbeinu, as if the Ribbono Shel Olam ever operates that way, but still at least gives that implication of less of a directed discussion or a directed prophecy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to appear that way, so he sort of hid the Aleph a little bit. So the message of Moshe Rabbeinu's humility, especially from the perspective of our modern world where we live, where it's a world full of self-promotion, and that's all people do on social media all day, is to try to Shalom Aleichem, welcome. It's to try to exaggerate. Hi. So that all people tend to do is try to exaggerate their own accomplishments and their own self-worth and their own what they've been up to. The way that they interact with significant people, meaning that's just like that's the culture, right? Whenever you see somebody of note, what's the first thing you do? You take your phone and you take a selfie, right? Meaning I saw an interview that Nachum Siegel did with Rav Schechter, and it was interesting because normally like you had like Rabbanim that speaks to Rav Schechter, and you get to see that. You see Rav Ephraim Goldberg interview Rav Schechter, but Nachum Siegel was like asking like the kinds of questions a Baal HaBas would ask Rav Schechter. You know, it was like very fascinating. So he said to Rav Schechter, on the way in today, three people stopped you and took selfies. What do you feel about that? Like, do you feel that that's like a good thing, a bad thing? That's where the world is at. That everyone just wants to take a selfie with you. And Rav Schechter Kedarko said, if having a picture of me somehow enhances someone's Shemir Samitzvos, because in day, let it enhance their Shemir Samitzvos. Why not? But the whole notion that if I see someone that's notable, the very first thing I need to do is to show that I was hanging out with that person. Meaning, it's not like it used to be you'd have Gedolim pictures of Gedolim. Now it's like, I was hanging out with that person, right? That's immediately on my Twitter feed. It's immediately on my Facebook. It's immediately for people to see. So that whole concept is just like so pervasive in our society. And like the little Aleph reminds us, and Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, he put away the camera. He put away the selfie. He put it away when he had an opportunity to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It was Vayikar. It was not Vayikra. But I get that. That message, I mean, it certainly resonates. I understand it, especially from a modern perspective. But the question still begs itself, like, why here? We just went through a whole Sefer when Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Sefer Shemot is like, Moshe Rabbeinu pretty much brought us God's autobiography in Sefer Shemot. He accomplished a lot in Sefer Shemot. And the remez to the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu is dafka over here. How many other conversations took place between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu before this point, and that same idea could have been emphasized, and now dafka at the beginning of Vayikra it's emphasized. So Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein suggests that the message of humility is particularly relevant in Sefer VaYikra, and he suggests for three reasons. First, he says that the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu is emphasized particularly over here because that kind of is a critical component of Karbanos. Sefer VaYikra is Toras Kohanim. We learn about a lot of the Karbanos, and it sort of sets the stage for Karbanos. The Gemara in Sota teaches us that it used to be that mi shechayiv chatas, yavi chatas, schar chatas biyado. If you were chayiv karban chatas, you'd bring a karban chatas. And guess what? Then you got credit for a karban chatas. Mi shechayiv ola, yavi ola, schar ola biyado. You chayiv karban ola, you bring a karban ola. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you credit for a karban ola. Achshav she'en beis hamikdash, now that we don't have beis hamikdash kayam, yashpil esatzmo. That, the whole avoda becomes to humble oneself, that we don't have karbanos, so in place of karbanos, what do we do? Anivus. What we do is humility. Midrashim quote three reasons that we don't have chayos for karbanos. We only bring behemos for karbanos. We never bring a chaya as a karban. And one of the reasons that the Midrashim quote is that chayos walk with a kumazakufa. They walk with a sense of gaiva, the way they carry themselves. And such an animal is the exact opposite of what a karban is supposed to be. That a karban is supposed to be, that it's supposed to be a reflection of humility. So if we're ever going to choose a place to highlight how Moshe Rabbeinu hid himself and hid his own, so something that could have been a great source of his own pride, it makes sense to put it at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. That's one reason. Second, Rav Zilberstein points out, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu's humility can only be appreciated after we've already seen Sefer Shemos. Meaning, if a person has accomplished a great deal, more than anybody in human history ever has or will accomplish, and then you tell me that he's humble, that's a little more meaningful than someone you know nothing about. You know, then there's a guy who was born from humble beginnings and he's still humble. You know, that doesn't tell you nearly as much about the person. The story is told of Shlomo Eger that he once walked into a shul and he saw that there was one person who was clearly respected more than everybody else, and people went out of their way to be mechabed this person. So Shlomo asked, "Is the guy Talmid Chacham?" And they said, "No, not particularly." He said, "Oh, he must be an usher then, right?" Those are the first two guesses, usually in reverse order, but still. He said, "Oh, is he an usher? Is he a rich person?" He said, "Nah, not really. Is he a gibor? Is he like politically powerful?" And I'm like, "No, far from it." So he said, "So why is everybody showing him such respect?" He said, "Oh, he's an incredible anav." So Shlomo said, "That's not really an anav, meaning it's not so remarkable to be an anav when there's nothing remarkable about you. If there's something remarkable about you and then you're an anav, that's a little more impressive. It's not, I mean, it's something you have to do, but it's nothing to be particularly to draw attention to." The Gemara in Nedarim Daf Lamed Ches said that we see from Moshe Rabbeinu that a navi has to be a gibor, ashir, chacham, va'anav. That in order to be a navi, a person needs to be a gibor, an ashir, a chacham, and an anav. And the Sofer explains those aren't four different criteria. It's one criteria that you need to be an anav, but you can't truly be an anav unless you have what to be humble about. Meaning, unless you have what not to be humble about. That only a person is a gibor, a chacham, and an ashir, which are the things that typically people are most prideful of, and people are most arrogant about, and people, you know, are most likely to brag about. It's only in that context that a person can achieve a nivus. So the Torah waits until Moshe Rabbeinu has defied the house of Paro, has run away for decades, has come back and ended centuries of slavery, has led the people through the sea, has stood up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save the people in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel, and to build the house where God is going to reside on earth, to build a Makom Hashra'as HaShechina, before telling us about his humility. Because when you consider all of those accomplishments, the humility is all the more remarkable. And that, says Rav Zilberstein, is the second reason that we have the allusion to Moshe Rabbeinu's humility here at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. But then there's the final reason, and this is the one that I thought was most resonant. Meaning it's hard to relate to karbanos being a reason, because we just don't relate to karbanos. It's hard to relate to being a gibor chacham and, you know, an ashir, and still being an anav, because, you know, most of us are not also a gibor chacham and ashir, right? So it's hard to relate to those reasons. But then there was one final reason that I thought was worthy of a little more focus. And it's a point about anivus that I guess I never really noticed before. But once you see it, you realize how true it is. When you pay attention to the way people work and how people speak, you see there are three different ways that humility can be demonstrated or expressed. Three different contexts within which a person expresses humility. And one is much more impressive than the other two. Let me explain. One way to express humility is when you're speaking to people like your parents. You're speaking to your Rebbe, to your grandparents, your boss. Someone who clearly, where there's a power differential, where there's a clearly on a different level than you. So when you speak to them, you speak with humility. And that obviously is to be expected. There are even like explicit halachos about that in Hilchos Kibud Aveim, about not contradicting. That's mora'av, is that you're not allowed to contradict that which your father says. Oh, but what if you're really smart and what if you know more about the topic? You act humbly because it's your father, because it's someone that that is not on your level. You speak to people. I know one of the pet peeves of like my parents' generation, not necessarily everyone in that generation, but I've heard growing up, I heard a lot of times someone would refer to their mother as she or their father as he. It's not she, it's your mother, right? Meaning it's like, no, my ima. You know, you have to say like this is, you've heard it, it sounds like you've heard this, yes? Okay, so, what?
Who's she?
So, meaning like you speak with reverence, of course, because it's a parent, and that's the way you speak. See, you're speaking to people who are assumed to be on a higher level than you. So, such a person has no choice but to speak with humility. Somebody who behaves that way is simply following social protocol, and that's certainly nothing special. Although, again, it's demanded, it's required, but it's therefore not so special. Failure to do so would be insubordination, would be wholly inappropriate to not do that. So that's one context that Anivus expresses itself. The second context, which is a little more impressive, but still not as impressive, is when people are speaking in the other direction, to their students, their children, their employees, other subordinates, where there is a power differential, but it's in the other direction. So such humility is more impressive because you're dealing with people that you have no reason to humble yourself in front of. And it's certainly not a social norm, and it's certainly not expected, but it's also not that challenging. Meaning it's not that hard to do, because it's not that difficult to act humbly when dealing with people who are subordinates, because it's assumed that there's automatically a certain reverence in the relationship, a certain separation in the relationship, and it's therefore not a risk to your reputation when you act humbly. Meaning if you're the CEO of the company and you're talking to someone in the mailroom as if you're equals, the guy in the mailroom is not going to say, do they still have mailrooms? They still have mail? Whatever. But the guy in the mailroom is not going to say, oh, I guess I could be the CEO because, we're the same because, we were schmoozing over a coffee. Meaning he understands that, this is a person who's accomplished a certain amount and he runs the whole company and I'm not. And obviously, there's that automatic differential. To the contrary, the likelihood is that it will cause people to respect you even more, right? Meaning it's only going to enhance your reputation. So why wouldn't you act in a humble way? I think Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva somewhere, Rav Moshe was asked, I don't know what he was asked exactly, I don't remember what he was asked, but he discusses why it is that he gives brachos to people when they ask for a bracha. He says, people come to me for a bracha. He said, they assume that because I'm a Rosh Yeshiva, they assume that I'm a tzaddik and that my bracha is therefore very meaningful. He said, because I happen to have a job as a Rosh Yeshiva, as if MTJ made Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe made MTJ. MTJ, you know what I'm saying? But he said, they assume because I'm a Rosh Yeshiva, I must be a chash of a person. And if I tell them that I'm not, if I reveal the truth, that I'm really no one special, I'm really not a tzaddik, they're just going to say I'm an anav. And then it's not gonna work. Then they're just, so I just give the bracha because that's the path of least resistance. Plus, alte birchas hedyot kalabeinach, even a birchas hedyot is meaningful. But you see that struggle, meaning acting with anivus sometimes just enhances the reputation of the person. Sometimes talmidim will come and they'll talk about certain topics that I know nothing about, and I'll say at the beginning of this conversation, I just want to let you know, I know nothing about this conversation. And talmidim will be like, oh, you're such an anav. No, I really know nothing about this conversation, right? Meaning about this topic that sometimes because there's your view, a rebbe is this, a parent is that, a grandparent, a boss, or whatever. So it's easy for that person to speak humbly. So that's not as impressive. The most challenging point to be humble, the most the most impressive type of interaction to express humility is the interaction among equals. People have a tendency to try to one-up each other about the oddest of things, right? What's someone's reaction naturally if you don't catch yourself and someone says, oh, I'm so tired. What's the immediate response? Me too. Oh, I barely slept last night. But we weren't talking about you. We were talking about, right? Well, why is that like the immediate was like every, like whatever you do, I'm going to match it. I'm going to mirror it, or I'm going to one-up it. And that's your coworker tells you of a professional accomplishment. You instinctively want to respond with your own professional accomplishment. Someone says, I got to talk to I asked the Shaila of a Gadol Adar. Oh yeah, I once met two Gadol Adar. It's just like there's this natural tendency to just, you're afraid that since your equal can be perceived as a threat, there are times that we're afraid to lower ourselves too much, because doing so might be construed as acknowledgement that I actually am inferior to somebody who should be my equal. And the next time somebody is promoted, let's say, in my company, or the next time, someone is up for, Kolelion or whatever, if I was too humble the whole time, then they're going to start believing it, that guy is really greater than me. So I'm going to be very careful about that. It's part of the phenomenon called a humble brag, T4. I'm not up on the terminology, right? But the idea that that a person wanting to sound humble will simultaneously try to draw attention to their accomplishments. Like, I can't believe that everybody says I'm so handsome. I really think I'm just average looking, I can't believe that everyone thinks. I'm like a model. I don't see it, but like, I don't know, what do you think? That whole style of talking is the idea is that people want to observe the social convention of humility, but they don't want to actually be humble. They don't want it to affect their reputation in any way. The truly humble person doesn't think about himself at all when acting humbly, meaning it's really just not about me. I'm just not drawing attention to myself. I remember, I forgot who it was, one of the Maspidim, when Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg passed away, had said about Rav Zalman Nechemia that it's not that he ran away from Kavod. He didn't even know what it was. Like, it wouldn't have occurred to him to see Kavod. It just wasn't an entity in his life. It wasn't something, and that's real anivus, that a person's just, it's just really just never about the person. It's just not something that they're interested in. It doesn't register on their radar. And the truly humble person doesn't think about themselves, even if it harms their reputation. They'll continue to shun the spotlight. Moshe Rabbeinu had completed the fundraising and the overseeing the construction of the Mishkan in painstaking detail. And now it's time for the Mishkan to be up and running with Karbanos. And Moshe now has to step aside and let Aaron take over. Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu is Moshe Rabbeinu, but Aaron is going to be the CEO of the Mishkan. He's going to be running the show. Now, they're brothers, siblings, tend to be equals. There's a natural rivalry. I can imagine that when people are in any position of sraro or whatever, and they have to step aside, whether again it be a CEO of a company or a president of a university, a rabbi of a shul, whatever it might be, that I can imagine it's difficult to hand over the reins to somebody else. But the great act of graciousness on behalf of Moshe Rabbeinu is amplified by the fact that Chazal tell us that he stayed in the Ohel Moed as a way of completely stepping out of the spotlight. But Ohel Moed, says the Medrash Rabbah, Amar lo Moshe min atzad, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ad masay ata mashpil atzmecha, ein Hashem mitzapa elucha, you're needed over here, you're a key player. Moshe Rabbeinu just wanted to be away from the limelight. This was Aaron's moment. Rashi, in Shemos, in Parashat Va'era, teaches us that Aaron and Moshe are sometimes listed with Aaron first and sometimes with Moshe first, because they're shkulin, they're equal. The greatness of Moshe's humility is best expressed in a context that comes between equals. And maybe that's why we wait for Sefer Vayikra, because in Sefer Shemos, Moshe Rabbeinu is being Moshe Rabbeinu. He's acting on his own, but now you have that moment where it's Moshe and it's Aaron, and the keys are sort of being handed over. Part of the beauty of Torah is how much can be conveyed in a single letter, and in this case, in a single tiny letter. You learn not just a lesson in humility, but really three lessons. That karbanos, which represent the most basic form of Avodas Hashem, are symbols of the midah of anivus, meaning avoda is, when we use the term avoda, it means karbanos, and the karban is a symbol of anivus. That was the first idea that we expressed, which tells us about avodas Hashem in general. And that's why all the Bali Musar focus on anivus before they focus on any other midos. And that b'makom gadluso shamata motzei anvasnuso. That second idea, that as we grow in our personal, professional lives, spiritual lives, it's important to be on guard to retain humility. And adarava, that's where humility really happens. Only when a person is accomplished. And third, that the and to me most resonant, that the ultimate accomplishment in humility is when we don't stand to gain personally from it whatsoever, and to the contrary, that we're humble even when others might view it as a threat to our own standing, when we lift others who are on our own level, when we lift those around us, when we lift them up and we raise them up, and might seem to be at our own to our own disadvantage, but we're just not thinking about ourselves, and that ultimately is the anivus of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, good.